All right. Welcome to the Beer Opinions podcast. As always, I'm Pat Berger, owner of Kaiser Tiger and Patty Long's. And with me is Bruce White, owner of the Chicagoland Beer Tours. Bruce, how you doing?
All right. Doing well, man. Just full of turkey. Happy as a clam after that Thanksgiving feast.
You know? This is our post-turkey podcast.
Tryptophania.
You're gonna have a tough time looking at me today because the mic is facing the other way.
The mic is the other way. Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
It's all right. I know. You can't keep your eyes off me. I understand. So, yes, lots of turkey. Did you drink a lot of beer with your turkey?
You know, I actually had a fair amount of beer, which is always a pleasant thing. My mom, I've trained my mom now. When I used to go home for the holidays, she would have beer, and it would usually be, you know, pretty standard mass-marketed Pilsners. And I'd be like, and I'd pour it, and I'd be like, how old is this? And she'd be like, well, that was, I think, from 4th of July 3 years ago. And I'd be like, oh, come on, Mom, you're killing me here. But I think now we've kind of worked our way through. So she's getting not only kind of more newer beer within the past 3 months or so, but also some good craft stuff. So
that's
too,
good.
So.
I had the opposite problem with my mom. I had some vintage bottles at her house, some Christmas beers from Unibrew in Canada. And years ago, you know, she said, oh, you know, I threw away all that old beer. It said 2008 on it or something.
It was out of code.
And I was like, Mom, just so you know, when it says the date really big on the label, that means, you know, don't throw it out.
It's like
when it says vintage 2000 something, leave that one alone.
It's like the craft beer equivalent of throwing out old baseball cards.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So we have a special podcast. Well, it's always special, isn't it? But today we have guests, and we love having guests. We have two today, which is unusual, and they are the co-founders of Low Res Brewing Company. We've got Kevin Lilly with us. Kevin, how you doing?
Good, really good. Thank you.
Excellent. And you are the co-founder and the head brewer, I might add. And with you is the other co-founder, Dave Dahl, and CEO. I'm going to throw that in there. You're the CEO. Full titles here.
Yeah. Okay.
Full
Make
titles.
It official.
Yes. But Dave is the one that I see all the time. He comes by with all of the beer, and it's been very good. We're we're happy to have a new brewery in the city that that doesn't suck. Just like, isn't that the Cubs motto? I'm gonna stay away from it then.
As long as Low Res is above the suck line. Okay, that's a good start, I guess.
I know, yeah, I'm really.
I think I read that on your mission statement on your website. You
try
know?
Not to suck. I wish all the new breweries adhere to that, but they don't. So it's nice to have a new guy on the block who is making very good beer. We're very happy with it. And
cool. Well, just real quickly, you guys, you guys have been awesome to us, Kaiser Tiger, and Patty Long's too. Been picking up a lot of our beers and. It's always fun to stop and see the folks at both places and talk about beer and shoot the breeze.
It is. It is always fun. That's nice. You know, and I'm telling you, we're not doing it because we like you, even though we do like you.
Right.
And we're doing it because the beer is good.
Beer,
yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right,
yeah. And that's the number one thing. You brought some beers with us, and we're not drinking yet, so we need to kind of change that up here.
It's bad luck.
It is bad luck to start this. Yeah.
It's weird.
This podcast doesn't get good until we start drinking.
All right, let's get good then.
Just knocked into the mic. All right, yeah, what do we got? What's first?
All right.
We'll start with Damon, which is our Belgian-style strong golden ale. This is 100% Pilsner malt, Czech saaz, and a couple of kind of English descendants grewed in Yakima. So Willamette, you know, kind of blend of hops. And then we throw a lot of sugar syrup into the fermenter to increase the ABV without adding a lot of body to it. We kind of time our sugar addition so the yeast is happiest and really gives us all the flavors we want. So,
that's interesting because I like this beer a lot. In fact, it's on tap right now at Kaiser. What I liked about it was, you know, it reminds me sort of Duvel, mm-hmm. where it's cloying. You don't realize how strong this beer is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's not the case with these you know, Belgian strong ale. Sometimes they're heavy in the you know, fusel alcohols and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you guys avoid that by And I'd asked Dave about it when he brought it by, and he mentioned that you avoid that by adding the sugar slowly so that you're not overwhelming the yeast. Is that right?
Right, exactly. So we let primary fermentation pretty much complete itself. The yeast is eating up all the maltose that it's getting out of the grain.
Yeah, because it'll go for that sugar first over the maltose, right?
Exactly.
It's easier for it to digest effectively.
Right. So then we time in, like you say, we add it over the course of 3 days. We add that simple syrup into the fermenter 3 days in a row. And just let it do its thing without getting too fusily and stressed out or anything like that. So it took us a little while to kind of dial that in on the small batch system. We're really happy with where the beers come out at this point. So, and like I say, it keeps the body light. It keeps it super drinkable.
So. And then we ferment it up at, what's it, we let it free rise. From what, about 60, 65, 68 to about
68? 85? No, this one doesn't go that high.
That's
68 to about 75. Yeah, okay. Our Saisons we do higher, but this beer up to about 75 degrees.
Okay. It's got that nice, spicy, phenolic flavor, mm-hmm. You know, whatever yeast you're using is.
You'll find as we, during this conversation, that Kevin's the detail guy.
I have to be. So.
Dave does a good job. I ask a lot of... nerdy questions to all these salesmen, and Dave usually has an answer for me. He does good.
Yeah,
answer.
I mean, I yeah. think
whether
know,
it's right or not, we don't.
Tomatoes.
Dave's not just a salesman. I mean, we developed all these recipes jointly over the years of homebrewing, and then even now in the brewery, we're constantly feeding ideas back and forth. So I might be doing all the detail work and remembering all the details, but. You know, his input is a huge part of how all these recipes come together. So he should know. He should be able to talk on the sales side what's going on.
He does.
He does. Yeah, he's good at that.
Depending on what brain cells are working that day.
Now, you guys, I was kind of, you guys, it seems like we're kind of in the IT coding. I think Code Monkey was on one of your profiles.
Yeah, definitely.
How did you get kind of started into brewing? It seemed like a pretty standard story in home brewing, getting more and more into it over a course of a long time, right?
Yeah.
I started home brewing back in the dark ages, like 93 or so, I think 1993, back in the dark ages of home brewing. And then Kevin and I met. Kevin and I had been coworkers. One person reporting to the other person back and forth, different companies, drinking buddies for 20 years.
Yeah, a little over 20 years at this point.
And during that time, you know, we had sort of straight-laced jobs, the 9-to-5ers doing IT work. And then, you know, Kevin and I started homebrewing together. Along with a third buddy of ours, and like everybody that homebrews, when you're particularly hammered, you always talk about, you know, how great it would be to have your own brewery.
Yep.
And so we decided to actually sober up and talk about it a little bit as well. And started putting financial plans together and just some trying to make sense of how you do it. You know, like what kind of money are we talking about back in...
Yeah, how long ago was that?
That was probably maybe 2010, 2011. I was doing spreadsheets at night, you know, and in the office when the boss wasn't looking, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then Kevin and I got serious about it. There's three phases we went through. I should say four. I'm going to add a new one, which is sort of the education phase. We approached it from the perspective of we're not going to do this unless we're going to put out great freaking beer. I took a bunch of Siebel courses, got BJCP, Cicerone, and Kevin took a similar route, got the accreditation through their brewing sciences, I think it is.
Yeah, it's like brewing technology. It's their associate program.
At Siebel.
So the full
right.
Siebel
yeah.
program.
Right. Yeah.
Is that the one where you also spend time in Germany as well?
I did not do that. That's like an add-on, and it's, you know, a three-year waiting period to get into whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, it's really hard to get into that program. So I did the coursework, but not the hands-on apprenticeship in Germany.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky to have Siebel here in Chicago,
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. You know, you tell people that one, arguably the best brewing school in the world. You know, there's, I guess there's two or three that are killer, and one of them is in freaking downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I always get a kick. They're now at Kendall College, I think, is where it's based out of.
Yeah.
They've kind of moved locations over the years. And
they have moved around a bit, yeah.
I always get a kick if you see the photos of the graduating class sizes. You can literally track the beer kind of ups and downs of the beer industry because the classes kind of grow and shrink over decades.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. But beer school, I think, dates back to 1872.
It's super old, and you know, it used to be out on Pulaski in this giant building, and
far from Alarmist.
Alarmist has their old Siebel space.
Be the building.
It's like Peterson and Pulaski.
Yep.
Yeah.
Alarmist is in the old Siebel space.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I got to get out there. That's been on my list for.
Yeah, it's a fun
too
tap
long
room.
To get out there. Yeah, yeah.
Gary's a good dude.
He's a great dude. Yeah.
He's a weirdo. He's a good weirdo.
Yeah.
I went out there, and I was there for an event. And I was kind of but I was by myself at this event, and I ended up maybe being overserved. I'm not going to blame myself for this. And going across the street to like this cheap Chinese place and just like having like five meals. It was great.
That's awesome.
Sounds like our Bruce.
The next day I was like, oh man, my body's like, what did you do to me, man? But it was great at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because so they were in this giant building. They were, I think in the 50s and 60s and 70s, they were having huge class sizes. And then when the craft beer thing collapsed in the 90s, Siebel kind of collapsed. Mm-hmm. And they were bought by a distilling company, I believe.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I could be wrong on that. Yeah, I'm wrong. You know,
could be right.
Podcast. It doesn't need facts. But
who fact checks these days?
Siebel kind of took the same course as the brewing industry did, and suddenly they were in the basement at Goose Island.
Yeah right.
You know, it was like they didn't have a home.
Yeah.
And then they moved across the street, had their own office, and now they're been picked up by Kendall College. And, you know, it's a pretty neat facility to have anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great... Great that you can go, you know, you can keep your day job and go to Siebel at the same time if you're living in Chicago. A lot of people have to move up here for 5 weeks and take the course, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I did the condensed course in the brewing technology, which is a week. So I had to take vacation from my straight job. And then I came back. My boss was like, oh, how was vacation? I was like, well, I guess I better tell you what I'm actually doing. So broke the news. And he's super excited. He was super excited and still is, you know, supportive of us.
That's great.
Cool. So. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's got to be a little scary, you know. I assume you guys had good paying jobs and you're you're about my age, right? And, you know...
I've never been broker and I've never been happier.
Right. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Right.
It's awesome.
I mean, you know, it's neat. It's following your dream, right? And you know, we talk a lot of bad stuff about people opening breweries on this podcast, and it seems like I am often trying to talk people out of doing it right now. But it's really neat to see it you know, when it does happen and it works out
And listening to your podcast, I know exactly where you're coming from, and I don't disagree with that. You know, you have to go into it, and believe me, we haven't figured everything out. You know, we're still.
Yeah, how old are you now?
We're still pretty tight as far as cash flow goes.
Are you a year in?
We are. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been brewing since September of 2016.
Okay.
Distributing, you know, about a month or so after that. And then we opened our tap room this June 2017. So that's been our new addition.
Yeah.
And the tap room's beautiful, by the way.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Really, really nice. And
we love that space. It's a gorgeous building, old timber loft, brick kind of thing.
Yeah, and you guys opened it up really nicely and kept the whole warehouse feel.
You know, just cleaned it up and made it even more warm and comfortable. Yeah. And we looked, you know, that itself, I mentioned earlier, you know, there's sort of four phases. That was the education phase, and then we did raising money. We raised a bunch of capital and got bent over by a bunch of banks as well. And then the third phase.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, exactly. So we pay those bills.
Yeah.
The third phase was looking for space, and we spent a year walking through space, and we set foot in almost 100 different places all over Chicago. Chicago proper, you know, we didn't look outside of Chicago proper. And walking out of the place that we have now in Pilsen, like literally, I look at Kevin, I was like, oh shit, this might be it.
Yeah,
you know, it's just the bones of the place are so. The building is about 130 years old, you know, so it's red brick, heavy timber, exposed timber.
What was it when you guys were looking at it? Was it just empty?
It was light warehousing.
Yeah.
And it had been, you know, on and off. There had been some light industry in there. We know in the 50s and 60s it was a bakery, actually. So it's kind of gone through some ups and downs, just like that area of Chicago has cycled through some ups and downs.
Yeah. Pilsen's definitely on the up though, huh? Yeah.
It is. There's a lot of things happening in Pilsen now. We're really excited to be there and engaging with the community as those changes are occurring. Yeah.
You're not the only brewery either now. So there's,
we've got a couple buddies down there.
Yeah. I'm gonna forget some. Mooney Tongue is there.
Lulu's down there, right?
Mooney Tongue and Lulu, yeah.
Yeah, we're almost next door neighbors with Mooney Tongue. They're about a block away from us. And then Lulu's about six blocks over. We're all along 21st Street, so it's a nice little pub crawl down there to hit all of our little tap rooms. So
yeah, it's like a Southside Malt Row.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Right. In fact, we've been chatting off on with those guys from both places. We're trying to get a chance to sit down, drink some beers, and figure out something to do. I don't know what that means, but, you know, I feel like every once in a while the flashlight gets shined on Pilsen Brewing. Like, oh, we got to do something. You know, we
got
to do something to draw some more folks down there and get people more excited about coming to Pilsen for not just the great beer that's down there between Low Res, Mooney Tongue, and Lulu, but the art galleries and the restaurants and the coffee shops and the music venues.
Yeah, it's really happening over there.
Yeah. I might have to talk to you guys about a tour at some point
the
tours,
sure.
Because it'd be a great, it's on my top of my list. I think it'd be really cool and a great way to,
I see the light bulb over Bruce's head.
Yeah, sure. We've done a couple. The good thing is you wouldn't be the guinea pig. We've worked out some kinks. So definitely roll on by.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
How close are you guys to the new Mars Brewery? That's Bridgeport, huh?
Yeah, we're just over the river.
Okay.
From them.
Mm-hmm. I did take a tour of that. Looks pretty impressive.
I haven't been through yet.
Yeah, they're making good progress down there.
Yeah.
I'm excited for those guys. They're a fun bunch of folks.
They are. They really are.
They're also freaking weirdos.
Yeah, another group of weirdos.
Which is awesome.
In a good way, yeah.
Led by their merry prankster.
Yes.
Marzewski.
Mr. Edmar.
Right.
We got to have him on the podcast.
Yeah. I'm a little nervous, though.
Yeah.
You should be, yeah.
All right.
It's easy, though. You won't actually get a word in edgewise, so it's an easy podcast. You just turn it on and let Ed talk. Yeah, it's great. Well, good. So Pils is up and coming. The brewery's, getting there. What are the plans? You've got, this is the first time I've seen.
World domination.
Right.
I mean, isn't that everybody's plan?
It might be. Some people's. I'm seeing a bottle here, though. I've never seen a packaged bottle before. Are you guys going after, you're in retail accounts now?
You know, I'll start off and hand off to Kevin, but. The short answer is not really. So we do some bottling. We've got a 22-ounce bomber. The folks who are listening probably can't see it very well, but we've got a 22-ounce bomber in front of us.
Look more closely.
Right.
Let's see this thing.
So we do a little bit of bomber filling. 90% of it is sold through our tap room. We do have some slashies that we sell draft into that'll pick up some cases now and then, but 90% of it's through the tap room.
For non-Chicagoans, a slashy
right on.
Is a liquor store slash bar, usually pretty divey and with a sketchy tap room in the back.
Right.
Although now it's kind of, there's some hipster ones now that are very nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that concept of being overly divey has changed. I think there's some that have opened up, like Bitter Pops, that is brand new.
Totally, yeah.
And never had kind of that dive background.
Right.
And then
the new Fishman's I got to see, it's beautiful.
Oh, I haven't been there.
Beer Miscuous.
Sure.
I mean, Beer Temple falls in that category now.
And right? Maria's at Edmar's Place.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Probably the first slashy I knew of to, you know, that you would... weren't worried about getting slashed in.
But,
I thought that's why they called them slashies back in the day. Yeah. No.
So we're focused on, right now we're focused on draft sales, what we call wholesale, which is essentially selling to, you know, Kaiser Tigers, Patty Longs, the folks that restaurants and bars draft. We call it draft only because it's easy. And then the tap room. But, you know, we are noodling through what package really looks like. And these bombers, how long are we going to have bombers till the end of time? Probably not. You know, the bomber market's getting kind of weird and slippery right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have some thoughts on canning. I don't know if you want to expand on that at all, Kevin.
Yeah, I don't think...
just put you on the spot
We don't have definite thoughts. We
give us some dates, one of the cans. Let's go.
Right, yeah, exactly.
We always, in our business planning, we always wanted to go into cans. That's always been the case, and we've certainly seen the Chicago market embrace that. You know, I mean, when we talk about the phases Dave was talking about, we're talking 5 years ago, we wanted to go into cans, and there might have been Half Acre being the only one in Chicago doing it 5 years ago. Now, you know, you've got Spiteful, you've got Mars. Everyone's really seems like they're going into cans. So, but, you know, we'll get there. But we just got to fit it in. You know, we cut it out of the original plan just from a capitalization standpoint. You know, you can't do everything at once. So we focus on draft. Dave has done a great job growing the draft accounts. But, yeah, I don't know if we want to put any dates or time frames to when we're going to do cans.
August. is a month.
It's a month.
No year attached. August 20 something.
Right. Now we'll probably
we'll start dabbling, I think, in 2018.
Cool.
Yeah, and you know, I imagine we'll, depending on how the mobile canning industry, if you call it that, or sub industry grows, we'll probably toy around with that and just see how it goes. You know, once you have pallets and pallets of cans, then sales strategy changes radically. Mm-hmm. So that's something else that we're not prepared for today, but we will when we get ready to pull that trigger.
Yeah. Then you got to go talk to the Binnies of the world and all that. Yeah,
exactly.
And the Jewel Oscos and all those fun people.
Right. Exactly. So it's a new set of accounts and a new sales strategy, and you know, we're starting to wrap our heads around what that's going to mean for both production and then the sales side of it as well.
Yeah. So. Well, it's nice to build up some demand and, you know, have a buzz going before you venture into such things, you know.
Yeah.
And then growing slow is a good idea, I think.
In the meantime, the bombers are filling a packaging need, and we, like I said, we tend to do kind of the higher ABV, the kind of beers you want to split with people, you know. So we're not going to put our Berliner Weiss in a bomber, but that's a perfect six-pack beer, right? So we're doing the things like we're doing a Belgian Quad this winter. We're going to bottle that, the Imperial Stout, you know, the things that you're more used to seeing in a bomber. And that's working pretty well. Yeah. And like Dave said, most of that's taproom sales right now.
And I imagine price point wise too, the you want the higher ABV, it's going to sell better.
Yeah,
the bomber price point.
Exactly. Yeah. There's certain things that still make sense in the bomber market, and you know, not other things.
The bottle share beers, as they're known.
Exactly.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
What do you think, kind of as you've gone through this process, has been? I'm sure there are a lot. It's just hard. It seems like it'd be a really hard business to start. But what's kind of been the biggest challenge or challenges as you've made your way through it? Sorry.
Wow.
I'll say this. So this is a very broad umbrella. Perseverance. There's roadblocks everywhere. When you're starting a brewery, I mean, there's roadblocks from finding capital. There's roadblocks to, like, leasing a space. There's construction roadblocks. There's equipment failures. And it's just the perseverance. Like, and I tell people, like we were talking about earlier, with people getting into, hey, I want to start a brewery, I'm telling them all the time, you got to be in it for the long haul. This is not like you're just going from your garage homebrewing to, you know, it's all going to work out. It won't all work out. And you have to be focused, and you have to say, this is what I'm throwing in on. and be 100% committed. And, you know, it's been great having a partner who is obviously the same mentality, but like being able to like shoulder the burden part of the time and, you know, back and forth. I mean, it's really a long road. And I think that just as an umbrella statement about, you know, I don't think we would have thought that going into it.
Yeah. And, you know, perseverance, that's huge. And then the one that's related to that is the prioritization. You know, there's, I mean, not just now that we're up and running, but, you know, as we're going through those different phases, as well as today, I mean, you got to be able to prioritize on the fly and know when something gets deprioritized and be okay with that. And, you know, okay, this is going to slip till next week or next month, but F it, we have to do that for the sake of getting something else done. And both of those two things, the prioritization and the perseverance, I think is something that Kevin and I really picked up in our IT days, because most of what we did was either startup or early stage company, which is nerd speak for companies that have 0 to maybe 5 million in revenue, 10 million in revenue. And it's the same thing. Like, here's the hat that I want to wear today. And then there's five more hats on the table. I got to swap those out real time and know when to do that and when not to do that.
Yeah, I always talk about having to wear multiple hats. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. There's, you know, there's a lot of people that think opening a brewery just revolves around making beer, but
it's so much fun, right? all the time. Yeah. Just nonstop fun, because beer is fun, but it's a lot harder when it's your business.
And Everyone thinks owning a bar is just sitting at the bar drinking.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes it is.
Sometimes it is. You got to have a little fun.
Yeah,
or a lot
you
of
know.
Am I drinking too fast?
No.
I'm ready for another one. What's the next beer?
So the next one, so we brought two more. So we talked about Damon as our Belgian Golden Strong. And this beer I just cracked open, we call Memory Fault. And it's what I call a big wee heavy.
Okay.
So it's a wee heavy, but it's just a little bit richer, a little bit bigger.
Yeah, so we...
it's a not so wee heavy.
Yeah, less wee heavy.
We brew...
The BJCP people are going nuts right now.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't necessarily say this.
That's an oxymoron.
Firmly in the category. We sometimes talk about it as slightly moving into brown ale category or an imperial brown. I would say it's probably, you know, 80% wee heavy and slightly moving into brown ale. But it's a Maris Otter base, you know, a nice handful of specialty malts.
Maris Otter is sexy, by the way.
For those that don't know, you want to explain Maris Otter?
Yeah, Maris Otter is an English barley. It's just got a really kind of more intense kind of flavor than a lot of North American barleys. So we use it in this recipe probably about 80 to 85%. So it's the base malt. And it just gives a lot more body and just a depth of flavor that you don't get with your standard base malt. So we really like using it.
And it really brings a really nice, you know, a lot of times the base malt, frankly, in a lot of beers, base malt doesn't provide a ton of character. It's more structure that the specialty malts really shine on top of. But with Maris Otter, it brings a really nice sort of warm brown breadiness to the underlying structure of the beer itself.
Yep.
So we use it quite a bit in this Memory Fault, as we call it, as well as Public Declaration, which is our Imperial Stout, ton of Maris Otter. In fact, I think that's the full base malt there too, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it's a pricey malt too, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's imported and it's a little more of a specialty. It's probably
grown on a couple of farms or something. It's
I don't know if it's quite that, but it's like a couple of whatever they call them in England, counties, like, you know, Sussex, Essex, whatever, you know. It's a smaller base where it's grown.
The champagne of malt.
It's maybe a little heavier than champagne.
Yeah, right. It's got its appellation almost. Yeah.
It's not the it's not the champagne of beer. Okay.
Someone already has that
title.
Yeah, right. You can't say that.
That's trademarked.
I mean, like, you don't have champagne, you only can grow it in one area. That's all I meant.
Yeah, you're going from an appellation perspective.
Yeah.
That's
the right word.
Appellation? Appellation's a mountain range.
No, that's the right word.
Is it
Appellation for like wine varietals and stuff? Yeah,
like Appellation. Yeah, not the Appellations.
See, right. Look at Kevin Kellen with the details.
I know. Well, really.
So this is Memory Fault, and then the next beer we brought, which will open in a couple minutes, but I want to get this in here because this is a Memory Fault that we did in. A Fernet barrel that we got from CH Distillery.
Oh,
so it's a little weird and a little wonderful.
It's a nice marriage of the Fernet with kind of the base beer. It's a weirdo though. You have to like Fernet. But.
CH Distillery made their own version of Fernet. Is that it?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They call it Fernet Dogma. I think there was a group of bartenders that they partnered with to create the recipe. I'm not exactly sure, but they call it Fernet Dogma.
Does it taste like Fernet Branca?
Yeah, it's definitely a Fernet.
Yeah.
And it hits all the notes.
Is Fernet a category of liqueur?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, so Branca.
Are there others on the market besides Fernet Branca?
Yeah, Leatherby does one. So another local producer that's doing a Fernet. But Branca's the main one. That's the historical, like, Italian version, right? So, but yeah, it's a Fernet's a type of liqueur. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So we. Friend of a friend introduced us to Tremaine Atkinson, the founder of CH, and he recently opened a huge production facility, production distillery in Pilsen. So we've
oh really
we've come I didn't know that. With him. Yeah. Oh yeah.
He's been here before. Really nice guy.
Oh yeah, he's a super dude.
Yeah.
And so we struck up a friendship, and we're shooting the shit the other day, and out of the blue, he kind of looks off into space, and he goes, "You want a Fernet barrel?" And I was like, "Yeah. When can I get it?" So we got the barrel, and then we figured out what we're going to do with it, and we put our Wee Heavy in it.
All right.
So, wow, and then that's awesome.
We sent that to FOBAB, the local festival of barrel-aged beers here in Chicago, FOBAB. We sent that to FOBAB, and we sent our rye barrel-aged Memory Fault as well. So those are both on there. We didn't bring that one, but next time.
Well, I didn't judge this year, so it's not my fault if it didn't win.
All right.
It's not a judge.
Now, do you guys, I always think of this when I talk on the tours with people who are homebrewers or interested in homebrewing. I feel like people with certain backgrounds or certain, brains do better at it, at brewing than others. And myself being in the other category. But I feel like an IT background would be just a tremendously helpful background to have because of, coding and kind of that attention to detail and that type of mythology. Have you found that to be true? Do you think that that's been beneficial to your brewing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we've noticed a huge crossover between IT folks and home brewing in general, because I think that engineering mentality, I got to cross all the T's, dot all the I's, take all my readings, gravity, everything, and then the mathematics. There's a lot of equations if you're working on your recipes and stuff. Just the precision. I mean, I think you develop that as an engineer, and it translates into brewing. Now, the art of brewing is like the recipe development and like tasting, the flavor, what we want to taste, how we get that out of the raw materials. But then the day-to-day is a lot of that kind of precision and engineering and, just keeping up with procedures, cleaning, is constant. And like just having that mentality really does help a lot. Yeah. And you see that a lot. I think you see a lot of people with that background get into it or excel at it,
Yeah. I remember when I homebrewed, I thought it was kind of like just, making a stew, but like, oh, a little of this, little of that. Yeah. And then somebody was like, even if you by a miracle, this tastes, good. You're never going to be able to do it again. I'm like, oh, of course, consistency
and,
as well.
And that's I think that's the path that, during those phases that Dave was talking about, we went from being home brewers who are like, oh, let's try this. Let's just throw stuff at the wall. Let's try this.
Let's make a big that. Let's make it really angry.
And then getting very serious about brewing and then crafting the same recipe over and over. Are we getting the same flavor profile? and just getting that mentality and getting over that kind of like, oh, I'm a home brewer and I'm just going to do whatever I want and just have fun on a Saturday getting drunk in the garage, which is how we started. I think that's how everyone starts because it is fun.
It is.
And it should be.
Yeah.
But you do get to the point where you're like, okay, if I'm going to do this seriously, like we're going to iterate and we're going to take some real serious look at how we're doing stuff.
And part of that was, as you know, we made all these crazy weird beers, some of which were awesome, some of which were crummy. In the homebrew days was, okay, well, what beers do we want to put out there professionally? Like, what are we into? What do we want to put out there? And then as we started honing in on that, then it became literally, what do we pull out of this recipe? Because everything, when Kevin and I do recipe development, like, everything has to have a freaking purpose. You know, we're not trying to put 7 grains in there because 7's a lucky number because that's freaking stupid. But, you know, even like the alcohol level, in fact, I was talking to Kristen at Patty Long's yesterday and talking about the alcohol level on our Imperial Stout. We had that jacked way up there at one time, and it was too hot and too weird and too noisy. And we're like, well, you know, the alcohol is a component. What's the purpose of the alcohol? Well, it's to help lighten the mouthfeel of a really dark, rich beer. So we ended up dialing that back to, I think it's 8.6 right now. Mm-hmm. But my point is that, you know, as we started thinking about it more professionally and the beers that we wanted to put out there and we sort of identified that, then it was like, all right, well, what's the purpose of everything that goes into this beer? And how do we make that, allow that to shine through?
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. So what is your guys' take on, what should we call it? The environment in Chicago right now. So we talk a lot on this podcast about the bubble, the dreaded bubble.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm denying it.
Almost every brewer on here does deny it. And I just, you know, I want to throw it out there. Are you, how competitive is it out there right now?
I mean, it's super competitive. It's also super collegial, you know, between breweries and breweries and publicans. I mean, it's every tap handle. Every tap handle, when somebody buys low res, somebody else's tap handle comes off and goes into a box for a little bit.
Yeah. I got a lot of those boxes downstairs.
Yeah.
Right.
Seriously. Yeah. And, you know, I still feel like Chicago in particular has a long way to go. I think there's still a lot of space for new beer. And whenever I talk about beer, I'm talking about quality beer. I mean, there's never room for shit beer.
Well, right? There was.
Well, yeah, exactly. I should say today. Yeah.
8 years ago, there was plenty of room.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun, weird time.
Yeah.
So I you know, me personally, you know, I feel like there's, and not just because, you know, I'm co-founder of Low Res, but I still think there's a lot of opportunity for craft beer in Chicago. There's more and more and more restaurants and bars that are changing into craft friendly places.
That is true. I mean,
I think eventually, you know, it's just going to become, you know, craft, at least in context of a retail place, a bar restaurant, is going to kind of go away in the sense that
it's just normal.
Yeah. Okay. It wasn't long ago where when I would go out for dinner, I would go figure out the places that had good craft beer on tap.
Yeah.
So I can have a good craft beer.
Right.
Now you don't. I still think about it, but I don't.
Not as much, right?
I don't lose sleep over it.
Yeah. And it's almost one of those things where you go to a place now that doesn't have it, and you're like kind of thrown off.
Yeah.
You're like, wait,
yeah,
that's all you have? Really? In Chicago.
Yeah, it doesn't happen much. Yeah. You got to be at, you know. I mean, you can go to TGI Fridays and probably get a pretty decent beer, you know. They'll have Lagunitas on or something.
Or Sierra, for sure.
You know. It's a different landscape in that regard. It's funny you say, you know, that you don't think about craft when you go out anymore. Is the whole term craft beer, is it dead? You know, we recently had another sale yesterday.
Right.
Avery is now 30% owned by San Miguel, which is a Spanish brewer. Same people that own.
They picked up our founders, right?
Yeah. So they own the same percentage of founders, 30%.
Right.
That kind of went under the radar. I don't remember a big.
Yeah.
Totally. No one seemed to care.
I don't think anybody knows. Like, I feel like
there wasn't an upheaval. Yeah. San Miguel doesn't have this terrible reputation like AB has and and Miller and stuff. So, you know, but officially Avery, you know, one of the craft stalwarts of this nation, been around since I think 93 or something, they are no longer labeled as craft beer.
By the Brewers Association. Correct. So when you say officially, that's the one definition. And I think it's easy.
Well, in fairness, they came up with the term, too. I mean, we didn't call it craft beer until they
decided it was
microbrew. Yeah, and they decided to call it craft beer because, you know, Sam Adams wasn't a microbrewery anymore.
Zing. Oh, you're hitting all the buttons.
Well,
exciting.
You know.
But, you know, Pat, I mean, you know, Kleenex called their tissue Kleenex, and now everyone else calls a tissue a Kleenex.
This is right, yes.
So at a certain point, you might coin a term, but it's gone beyond you.
Right.
And I think to consumers, craft beer means good, flavorful beer. I think to industry folks like us, craft means what the BA is defining it, and I think that's where the rub is, because everyone in the industry is looking at one definition. Everyone that's just consuming doesn't really care about that definition. They think of it just as, these are good beers
But the BA doesn't like that, right?
Well, they don't. But do they get control of that word anymore? Can they?
Well, they're trying, right? They're trying hard.
I almost feel like the craft brewing industry and brewers and publicans, it almost might be better for all of us to shift the conversation to less about craft versus non-craft, but almost... I think of the right word, but you know, where a beer comes from. You know, people, at least in Chicago, and I know elsewhere, people care about local. A lot of people care about where the food comes from that they eat, the beer that they drink, their cars that they drive. Now that's super blurry. That's a whole nother conversation itself. But you know, Personally, I don't really care if somebody is, you know, drinking a beer that's produced by somebody that's a large producer, but I would prefer if they actually went into that knowingly. Does that make sense?
So not try to blur it to sell more beer.
Yeah,
try
exactly.
To deceive consumers.
You know, whether it's 10 Point or Blue Point,
yeah, owned by AB, yeah,
exactly. You know, and I imagine a lot of the people that drink that probably have no idea.
Yeah, yeah,
and some subsegment of that would care if they knew.
Right,
Blue
just
Moon,
like people that know Blue Moon was owned by Coors for very long time. Yeah. So these are the sort of deceptive
facts are awesome.
Yeah.
I love facts.
I've always felt like if those are things that you do care about, you know, Google it. You know, it's not that hard. It's not like you have to go to the library anymore to figure these things out. It's all in the palm of your hand. But, you know, there is deception there, right? And there always has been, and there always will be in selling any product, whether it's, you know, Tito's handmade vodka, whatever that means. You know, I don't know how it's handmade. It's the number one selling spirit in North America.
Must be a lot of people.
There's a lot of hands. It's a whole bunch of hands. Or, you know, whether it's a Nature Valley, you know, salad dressing. It's probably not coming from a valley or nature or, you know.
Nature.
Any of the rest of it.
A chemical vat.
Yeah, it's coming from a giant factory. But, you know, I think people that care about those things, you know, they actually have to do a little legwork then, you know, and it's not as hard as it used to be to figure these things out. So the BA is, you know, trying hard to sort of be a barometer for these people. And, you know, they have that new symbol that you can put on your label.
The upside down bottle.
Yeah. And, you know, I see it has a purpose, but it's, you know, there's people like you who probably have every right in the world to put that upside down bottle on your label, but you probably aren't. And then are they confusing people by not having the upside down? You know, it's, I'm just not sure if any of these efforts are fruitful as far as having a distinction between craft beer and beer. You know, I think it's all beer. And then all of these small details need to be sussed out by the consumer and whether or not they care about it, you know?
You know, and something else that drives me nuts is I feel like there needs to be a better way to indicate quality. I mean, I think quality needs to be something that's
subjective, though, right?
It is subjective. You know, there's a lot of organizations that try to quantify that, but it's ultimately subjective.
It's hard to argue that a Miller Lite isn't quality. It is very high quality. They probably spend more money on quality than any craft brewer in the world. But is it good?
Yeah.
You know, fair. Some people think it is.
It's not.
You know, that's all subjective as well. Right. Yeah. I mean,
that's a good point. You know, I mean, what does quality mean?
And the other problem too is like, who bought Rate Beer? Was it Anheuser-Busch?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like then that whole process can be muddied. Not that they are, but that they could.
I think they are, actually. I think they got caught muddying something.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't know. We'll have to Google that. I think they got caught muddying some results.
You know, even the rating systems or whatever can be manipulated in certain ways. But I see your point,
no
for
kidder.
Sure. I mean,
but some indicator of quality is better than none.
Well, in like, I think about it, and of course the big brewers don't want this to happen. We've talked about a little bit the winification of beer. When I buy wine, I buy it a lot different than beer, and a lot of times I'm just overwhelmed, I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm looking at the labels, and they have Binny's, or a lot of stores will have that. What is the rating?
Wine
there
aficionado.
Yeah, and it'll be like 100-point scale, and I'm like, oh well, for the value, that looks pretty good, and so then I'll use that to make my decision. I don't know if that's what you're kind of thinking or whatever. But.
Yeah, I think so. I think what you're getting at, Pat, is, you know, I'm also struggling with this concept of craft, and is the word craft even meaningful? And if not, what is more meaningful to a consumer?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm sort of wrestling with. Things like quality and location, or location being, you know, who made it.
Yeah, and independence set.
Yeah. I guess that's sort of indirectly related to the producer. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's nothing we're going to solve today, is it?
Yeah, and I actually, just because it's beer opinions, I do.
Yes, lay down your beer opinion.
Yeah. I actually don't. I thought it was funny because the Avery, the owner, was like, I think they bought, 30%? Was that
30%,
right? And he's
like,
yeah, the 25% doesn't really matter. I'm like, well, obviously that's convenient for him to say now. But I don't have a problem with it because the line, and I was thinking a lot about this, the line has to be drawn somewhere, I think, for when you're talking about outside investment. And what... I see your point about consumers having a responsibility to investigate what they're doing, but the fact of it is...
I mean, if it cares, if you care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The fact of it is I don't think a lot of people care enough to do it, or will be too overwhelmed living their lives to do it. And I think that the Brewers Association is... That label is trying to help smaller brewers at the end of the day. It really is fundamentally trying to do so. Now... I don't know.
Well, of course it. I mean, it's owned and run by small brewers, right? I mean,
yeah, essentially. I mean, there's definitely a block of much larger brewers than us that are part of the BA, and
right.
I think, you know, their voices are certainly heard. They have concerns that are different than the small startup guys like us. But, you know, I would argue to your point about the consumer, if they don't have time to look up on Google who owns what, and is it 30% or 25% or 20%, most of them probably don't care. So then it comes back on folks like Dave and I, like, how are we marketing to that consumer? Like, if they don't care about craft as a word, they're just looking for good beer. Like, they've maybe moved beyond macro, but they don't know the difference between someone owned by San Miguel and someone who's independent. Then it's just a standard business. You got to market to your consumer.
Sure.
You know? And I think when people get too focused on craft or not, they're losing sight of what they have to do to run their business and engage that most consumers. Again, I know there's a like Pat said, there's a group of craft focus people that are like, I'm swearing off anything that AB buys. But we know, like, that's got to be small because people are still lining up on Black Friday for BCS.
Yeah.
Like, that didn't disappear because they got bought out.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's lists out there. Don't buy these beers, you know?
Yeah. And these there's probably a small percentage of people that follow that, and that's cool. That's cool if that's what they want to do.
There's definitely people that follow that, for sure. Yeah.
But I think there's the broad majority of at least American beer drinkers don't care too much about that.
Right. So. And I think that's where the BA is. So, you know, like you said, they are representing, I think, a small percentage of craft brewers in the United States, mostly the larger ones, who are facing way different problems than you are.
Yeah,
you know, consumer takes one look at your bottle and goes, that's a craft beer, right? Simply because they've maybe never heard of it, or they don't see it at every supermarket, or, you know, whatever it is. It's these guys who are in every supermarket who are like, hey, you know, we're still independent. We're still doing it right. And people are overlooking us, thinking we're not craft anymore, or we're not special, or we're not, you know, doing everything these small breweries are doing that are taking all of our market share. So, you know, I feel their pain, you know, the New Belgians and the Sierra Nevadas and the Sam Adams, you know, these people are not doing well.
I would love to feel that pain.
I know.
I would love to feel the pain in Belgium.
I feel bad for those billionaires.
Jeez.
But I think that's where most of this argument is being waged, is between those people and the macro brewers who are now putting their beer on the shelf that looks like Sierra Nevada and going directly after Sierra Nevada's sales, right?
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Those guys that are nationwide are getting close to nationwide. Right. They have a whole different set of problems, and they're trying to differentiate themselves. Hey, we're not this big corporation. We're still the scrappy guy.
Yeah.
And it's a harder argument to make when they're multi-coastal, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's I think, like you say, that's where some of this is trying to force the argument on everyone else as well.
That's a really good point. That's a good way. Good point.
Yeah. Well, thank you. All right.
Is that a good transition to another beer?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
For once, Bruce is agreeing with me. It's nice. Yeah. Let's.
I think Bruce is looking for another beer.
Yeah, I know.
He's just nodding his head, waiting for that.
Let's wrap up and drink more. Let's wrap up that portion.
All right. So this is the Fernet beer, right?
Right. So this.
I'm excited to try
this.
The
wee heavy aged in Fernet barrel. It's pretty Fernet forward. A lot of mintiness comes out on this one.
I like Fernet.
Yeah.
It's a nice. Is it a digestif or an aperitif? Do we know? I don't know.
I'm going to claim ignorance on that.
I think it's for after.
Digestif.
Yeah, it's for after a meal, right? Because all those herbs are supposed to settle your stomach.
There you go.
I like to, for the folks that aren't familiar with Fernet, I like to say it's... If Jägermeister grew up in a healthy household, you would have Fernet.
I also think of Fernet as the fancy Malort. I don't know. It's the nicer Malort.
It fills that role as like an industry shot, like a late night shot.
Very bitter.
On the West Coast, it's like the bartender shot.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know, its number one market is Brazil.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, where they drink it with Coke.
I can see that.
Fernet and Coke.
Oh, this is great.
So you get sort of a, in fact, Tremaine from CH, where we got the barrel, the first thing he said, he looks off in his face and he goes, Andy's Mints.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because there's really interesting.
Yeah, the sweetness of the beer just numbs that bitterness of that Fernet flavor.
Yeah, because the aroma is like all Fernet.
Oh, it's super strong aroma.
Right, but then the flavor, you're right. It's like a peppermint patty, because there's a little bit of cocoa and chocolate from the malt and stuff, and then.
That's really good. I like this a lot.
Man.
It's a weirdo, but it's a fun weirdo.
I like it.
Yeah, that's great.
Very interesting.
Have you guys noticed? I assume having. One of the benefits of having a tap room is you get pretty immediate feedback in terms of what beers are selling well and what people are saying about the beers and what beers people are kind of trends that you can follow pretty close. Have you noticed anything in terms of trends, in terms of what people are drinking a lot of these days? Or
you know, I think, you know, we're putting out into the world the beers that we want to make, which is pretty strongly Belgian influence or malt forward. So we're not necessarily following the trends that we're seeing in the broader industry. We're not doing the hazy IPAs, that kind of thing.
Pants bummed. It's a banned subject on the podcast.
All right, well, we'll skip that. Point being, you know, we definitely see in the tap room, you know, we've got a Pilsner, and that always sells really strong. People just want to come in and drink a good, clean, crisp beer.
Yeah, it's funny how that, you know, works.
Yeah.
Both of my bars, you know, go through tons of Pilsner.
We have one hoppy beer, which is a pale ale, which is... actually not super hoppy at all, but not compared to industry standards. And that one sells really well in the tap room. And then we see some fluctuation on the Belgians. We definitely notice people coming in just looking for the high ABV, and they go straight for the Damon that we had earlier. And then we've got a couple of Saisons, and they're kind of neck and neck. Sometimes one's more popular, and then sometimes the other's more popular. So,
And one of the super interesting things that just occurred to me, and Kevin and I were talking about this a little while ago, a week or two ago, is that the more creative and exciting, and these are probably crummy words to use, but the more creative and exciting the beer is, the less it may sell, but the more people talk about it. Mm-hmm. So... like this Fernet barrel aged beer, you know, people rave about it. And we also did a rye whiskey barrel aged version of this Wee Heavy. People talk about that quite a bit. And our Imperial Stout and our barrel aged Imperial Stout, they talk about that. But it doesn't really sell super fast.
Well, you know, all of those beers are beers you aren't supposed to have too much of, right?
Yeah.
You know, Pilsners are designed to have six, and those beers are designed to have 6 ounces.
Right.
So, you know, that that has a lot to do with it. But then, you know, you need those beers that people talk about. You know, Goose Island just got done with their BCS launch, right? And it's crazy, and there's lines around the block and everything. But I bet it's 0.01% of their sales, you know?
Oh, yeah. How much intrinsic value of the Goose Island brand is based on BCBS? I mean...
I think it was very attractive to Anheuser-Busch when they bought it, for sure.
So that goes to both of your points. I think that's...
And I think they use it to leverage their other beers and accounts.
Oh yeah.
They, you know.
Definitely.
They don't with me, but,
you know. What for?
Well, you know, I've got a long relationship with them, and they want BCS in my bar. You know, they want to be in the craft bars.
Right.
But if you're, you know, Joe Schmo Sports Bar down the block, you're not getting any BCS unless you have a 312 handle, or I imagine. Maybe I'm being presumptuous, but. I think that's probably how it works.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
As a guy that sells a lot of beer.
Yeah. I don't know if it's, you know, what the legality on all of that is, but I think it's legal. They can hold beer over your head, you know.
Well, I mean, it's limited.
They can use the carrot.
Limited release. And I mean, there's a couple beers that we had super limited release, and we only talked to you guys and a couple others about it.
Yeah. Right. You're going to go to your best accounts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So, so what? Quick question: what percentage of beer is going out of the tap room? Is it a large amount? Is it more than you're selling in kegs on off premise, or is it?
It's
less?
it's almost 50-50.
So it's significant.
Right. Yeah, it's a little. It might be like 55% out of the tap room, and then 45% out of wholesale or direct to retailers.
Right, and you're making a lot more money on that beer than selling me a keg.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's... So if anyone's listening and wants to open a brewery, this is...
I can price it higher to you, but then you won't buy it. I mean, the margins, I mean, it's not hard to imagine, you know, when we produce it on one side of the wall and then pour it out of the tap on the other side of the wall, I mean, there's... the margin goes through the roof because it doesn't travel far. It doesn't exchange hands. There's no middlemen involved. Technically, there is with the government because that's the way it works, but not financially.
Right.
But now, I guess one thing I should say that might not be obvious is that we're a self-distribution brewery, which I know you know, Pat. But we sell directly to the retailers, so that cuts out a layer of that as well. But it's not free, you know, because I've got time that I got to put into that. Yeah. I've got gas that I got to put in my gas guzzling van that's illegally parked out front right now.
And don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Dave is actually the one that shows up when I order low-res beer to lug those things into my basement.
Yep. Is your elevator working yet?
No. Sorry. Hey, at least it's not a trap door like Patty Long's, right? That's a fun one, isn't it?
That's a scary-ass basement. Taking kegs down that basement is scary.
The basement itself is kind of scary, too. Mm-hmm. According to my chef, it's haunted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
cool.
I've never experienced any paranormal activity down there, but I'm willing to spread that rumor.
You need to get the ghost hunters like shows.
Yeah, yeah. Shh, did you hear something? Yeah. Right. Did you feel that? It's cold down here. Well, the window's open. Yeah, I don't think I have the third eye, but Angel is convinced that there is a ghost down there. All right. Well, I think now is the time we go around and shamelessly plug anything and everything that we're doing. We will start with our guests. Dave, what's going on with low-res?
Well, we're continuing to expand our accounts that we have outside of the tap room. Tap room's getting busier and busier. We've got events. We typically have one or two events every week, actually, and that's doing really well for us and bringing people in. And
are they different every week, or you guys do set things?
They're different, but one of the main things that we're doing right now in the tap room is we're partnering with a lot of local artists and local nonprofits. So we'll do a month long. We call it an artist gallery resident. Resident spelled with a Z, like low resident.
Oh, yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, fancy. A little branding there. I like that.
So we'll bring in a local artist, put their stuff up on the wall. We'll have a great big opening party and then a great big closing party. And then a large money that moves around that kind of setup, it goes towards a local nonprofit. And we have coming up a Friday, the 8th is our gallery closing party, Friday, December 8th. So we're going to have DJ, food trucks, a bunch of fun stuff going on.
Awesome.
Saturday, the day after, we're doing our holiday party in the tap room. So we're going to have more food. We're going to do a beer release. We got a rye saison coming up that we're going to release on that date. The 8th and the 9th of December, the Low Res Tap Room in Pilsen. We've got a couple fun things happening.
There you go. Kevin, where's the name Low Res come from?
Low Res is shortened for low resolution. So the way we kind of looked at it, we went from our high-tech careers, kind of online to offline, high-tech to low res, from bites to beers, if you will.
Got it.
Hey. Nice. This is great. Yeah. I love it. I love puns.
And a lot of it is a philosophy that we kind of look at. Like in high tech, it's always like, I need more hard drive space. I need bigger screen real estate, more pixels. Like you're always keeping up with the Joneses. And low res is like, wait, hold on. Just sit down, have a conversation over beer, get to know people again, forget about all this clicking on social media. So like low res is also kind of philosophy that kind of works with that as well. Just kind of backpedaling from just like hyper focus on technology in our lives.
That's great.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, Bruce, what's going on with you?
How much,
How's
man?
The job going? You still still employed?
Still employed.
You're dressed like you are.
I actually, my boss, shout out Art. He's actually awesome. Real nice guy. He listens to the podcast now.
Oh, cool.
Is that why he's a nice guy, or is he actually a nice guy?
He's a real nice guy, and he's like very supportive. I'm like, sorry, I have to go for 3 hours. Might be drinking some beer, and he's like, "Okay,
sounds like a decent job."
Yeah, like he's so it's great, and if you're a lawyer out there looking for a new career, I can help you out. You know, that's what legal headhunting is, my 9 to 5.
So,
beer tours on the weekends and wonderful. Nights and evenings and whenever,
and possibly a new Pilsen beer tour.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
what's the date? August of some year
is a month.
Getting ready. We're touring all through the winter. So we'll be touring on our loop tour primarily in the winter, but we can do Lakeview Lincoln Park. We can do Bucktown Wicker Park, other tours as well for private groups. And we'll get those dates are on our website. So you can check it out at www.chicagobeerexperience.com.
Excellent.
How about you?
What's happening? Lots. I've got a collaboration cider.
Ooh.
That is debuting this Saturday, December 2nd, but it'll be here for a while. I made it with Right Bee Cider.
Cool.
Which is a local cidery. I think the only local cidery in Chicago, and great husband and wife team, Charlie and Kate. Katie, great people. They'll be here on Saturday. We made a blueberry cider.
Nice.
Yum.
Yeah. So I basically, all I did was get on a rickety ladder and almost fall over throwing blueberries on top of a fermenter.
Been there.
Yeah. and poof, it's a collaboration. But it's really tasty. I have tried it. It's awesome. We back sweetened with a little bit of honey to make it palatable. It was super duper dry when before we did that. And I like it a lot. So we'll have that going at
that's coming
both places. That's coming Saturday. And yeah, it's a nice pink color, which I like, you know, a little pink drink. That's right. Yeah. And yeah, we got a bunch of events at Patty Long's and Barrel Age Beer Fest coming up. And we'll do our BCS release there in January. And I'm opening the whole cellar.
Nice.
So I've got bottles dating back to 2009.
Cool.
And we'll have five different BCSs on tap and, you know, see if people still want to drink this beer.
I've done a couple of vertical tastings at Patty's. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
So yeah, we've been doing it every year since, you know, before they were
AB-owned. I mean, you can really taste the difference when you do those verticals. So.
We did
on one of our homebrewing days, we did a 10-year vertical.
Wow. This is probably close to that, yeah.
7 to 10 years, and this is probably 5 years ago.
Yeah, we did a 10-year vertical on the 10th anniversary, just a private one of Patty Long's, and the 07 tasted great. I mean, you know, I don't age any beer except BCS now, and it's always held up for me. But, you know, I don't recommend aging much, but that beer, it gets better.
It's got legs.
Yeah, it's got legs. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, 14%, I guess we'll do that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much to the folks at Low Res here. We're really happy you guys came back.
Really appreciate you.
Yeah. This was a blast.
Yeah. Really happy for all the success in the brewery and all the beer, which is the most important thing, right?
Maybe. It's
all about the beer. All right. And thanks to everyone for tuning in and listening. And we will see you next time on Beer Opinions.
All right. Hi, Dad. Thanks.
Thank you.